Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
My pledge to you tonight is I will govern with the spirit of Sandy.
Guess who? From his victory speech last night. And yes, Chris Christie talked about New Jersey in his re-election. It was a re-election speech. Some people are forgetting that. But it was carried nationally with live cable news coverage. So a few minutes in came the pitch to perhaps his more important audience.
The biggest thing I've learned over the last 4 years about leadership is that leadership is much less about talking than it is about listening, about bringing people around the table, listening to each other, showing them respect, doing what needed to be done to be able to bring people together and to achieve what we needed to achieve to move our state forward. Now listen, I know that if we can do this in Trenton, New Jersey, maybe the folks in Washington, D.C. should tune in their TVs right now, see how it's done.
Uh-huh. And just in case they missed it around America, he said it again as the speech was coming to an end.
I know that tonight, a dispirited America, angry with their dysfunctional government in Washington, looks to New Jersey to say, is what I think happening really happening? Are people really coming together?
So let's talk about the New Jersey election results and Governor Christie's victory speech in both statewide and national context with New Jersey Public Radio managing editor Nancy Solomon and Glenn Thrush, who covers the White House for Politico. Hi, Nancy. Hi, Glenn.
Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
And listeners, our phones are open for your New Jersey and national politics calls on this day after the election, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Nancy, was this a victory speech by a reelected governor or a presidential campaign kickoff address?
I think you got to see it as a campaign kickoff address. I mean, it wasn't just the overt mentions of speaking to the national audience about his success in New Jersey, but it was also, I mean, for him to say the word Sandy so many times and to talk about Sandy. I mean, he's taking the Rudolph Giuliani route here, right? He's making his case to the nation that he was, you know, that he proved himself during Sandy.
Like Giuliani proved himself after 9/11, it's that parallel.
Exactly.
Glenn Thrush, how are you watching this speech as a national correspondent?
Well, it's funny. You mentioned the Rudy parallel, which I think is totally apt. I think the twist that Christie has on this, and the one that's really critical from a national perspective, is he is now branding himself, really unlike Rudy, as somebody who is moving beyond these kind of the vitriol and trench warfare of the 90s and aughts, right? So he is now really reclaiming territory that wasn't very valuable to hold for the longest time. And I think his point is, and it really stands as a counterpoint to Ken Cuccinelli in Virginia, who went down in a narrow loss to Terry McAuliffe last night for the governor.
Right, and we will talk in a little more detail about that later in the show, just for people who are interested in that Virginia race, which has national repercussions. Go ahead.
Right. Extraordinarily interesting as well. But Cuccinelli was really a Tea Party guy. He supported this notion of doing transvaginal ultrasounds prior to abortions. And Christie is really positing himself as an alternative to that kind of Republican.
So if there were two interesting things about the governor's victory speech last night, one was that he spoke twice, as we heard, about how Washington could learn a lesson from how he governs in New Jersey. And two, he promised to finish the job that he started in New Jersey. Contradiction here as he gets ready to run for president. Let's listen to what he said.
Under this government, our first job is to get the job done. And as long as I'm governor, that job will always, always be finished.
Though his second term may not be finished, Nancy, if he runs, especially if he wins. So what is he talking about there?
I think this is just pure rhetoric. I mean, he's allaying fears and concerns because he cannot make himself out to be a political creature, because that is so much a part of his identity. Is I'm here rolling up my sleeves. I'm working for you. I'm in your corner. I'm working with Democrats. I'm a bipartisan guy. His identity is wrapped up in not being a self-serving politician.
In fact, let me linger on that for a second and play this clip from the speech. Listen to this, 37 seconds.
What people have told me over the last 4 years is more than anything else, they want the truth. They want the truth. You know, we don't always agree with each other, New Jersey. Some folks don't agree with some of the things I do, and certainly they don't agree with some of the things I say sometimes. But they know. They know they never have to wonder. They never have to wonder. When they walked into the voting booth today, they didn't say, hey, I wonder who this guy is and what he stands for, what he's willing to fight for, what he's willing to do when the chips are down.
And again, Glenn, and I missed this listening to the speech live last night, in that clip he was talking again over the heads of New Jersey voters to the nation, because he didn't refer to them as you. He referred to them as they. In New Jersey, we have these things, but they know that I'm going to speak the truth to them. He didn't say, you know, like he's just talking to his constituents. So that the way that was worded also had national overtones. And is that what he's obviously that's what he's trying to land with out there in America. Do you have any early indications, you know, as a Politico reporter, how that landed on cable news around the country?
I think, you know, obviously, I think if you saw anything last night, and let me refer to yet another election, mm-hmm. the one for the heavily contested South Alabama congressional seat, which was occupied by a Tea Party guy who was then opposed by a more moderate Republican who was supported by sort of the National Chamber of Commerce crowd. That election in Alabama very clearly illustrates the schism in this party. I think the people who are inclined to like what Christie has to say, the establishment Republicans, the Mitch McConnell wing of the party, to some extent the John Boehner wing of the party, very much wants to see the Chris Christies in the ascent. The problem is, again, and it's Groundhog Day, man, we just keep getting back to this, there is a primary. There is a Republican Party that is all about the primaries, and they are extraordinarily conservative and very largely Southern and Midwestern. And then you have a more moderate wing of the party, which appears to be on the ascent, which has a lot of financial support in the Northeast, that is geared for the general election, really represented by Mitt Romney and others. So Chris Christie, I think, is impressing the people who want to be impressed by Chris Christie. But I can tell you that when you sort of talk to people in other parts of the country, he is a rhino, according to them. Same stuff that you've heard about Northeast moderate Republicans all throughout the years, despite the fact, and we heard a lot about this yesterday, that Chris Christie's record is generally pretty conservative.
So Christie obviously has an agenda to run for president. Does he have an agenda to run the state for the next 4 years, even for the next 2 or 3 years, Nancy?
Yeah, I think he does have an agenda. He laid it out in one sentence last night. But you know,
okay, we've got that one too. So hang on.
Okay.
26 seconds, go.
For me, being governor has always been about getting the job done first. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have principles. We have many of them. And we have stood and fought every day to cut taxes, to reduce the size of government spending, to reform pensions and benefits, to reform a broken education system, and to make sure that we create opportunity again for New Jerseyans.
I hope that was the line you were referring to.
Yeah.
To reform pensions, to reduce the size of government spending, to cut taxes, and to make sure that we reform a broken education system.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot more of that in the next 2 years. I think that he hasn't cut taxes. And, right now the state is somewhat buoyed by all the Sandy aid coming in. So he's got a steady diet of every day out there giving out these grants. He hasn't been talking about cutting back the state budget very much lately in the last year and a half. So, I think he's going to stick to a steady diet of, I'm the guy you like. I'm the guy who supports you. And he said, you know, the things that people believe about him that we found in the exit polls yesterday, that they believe he's running the economy well. They love the way he handled Sandy. They believe he ran the economy well because he had a multi-million dollar advertising campaign about the Jersey comeback. But the numbers don't support it. Joblessness is up, and we're not creating jobs, and foreclosures are high. I mean, so the state has not had an economic recovery. But if you say it enough times on TV, it sinks in.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio as we talk for the moment about the Christie victory and victory speech last night with New Jersey Public Radio managing editor Nancy Solomon and Glenn Thrush, who covers the White House for Politico, and you at 212-433-WNYC. And here's Mark in Westfield calling in. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Brian. It's good to actually be on the air for a change. I am so totally offended by the fact that the rubes I live in within New Jersey reelected this man who's campaigning for president, who will not be serving the last or will not be in the state of New Jersey for 2 years. I'm furious. The fact that he blatantly went through this, the fact that he's blatantly lied about everything he's done, including even the gay marriage, his complaints about that. You know, I'm just so frustrated by the fact that he's just a politician, pure and simple.
Mark, thank you. Not many is the caller who refers to his neighbors as rubes.
Rubes, yes, I like the rube thing.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Glenn.
I want to actually just kind of cast back to something you guys were talking about earlier about kind of the New Jersey focus versus the national focus. So, and I think the point that the caller makes is an interesting one. You know, Christie is a very intuitive politician. I mean, one of his gifts, and I think his greatest gift, is the fact that he can sort of kind of effortlessly dovetail these very clear ambitions that look really ugly on other politicians into his larger persona, his ability to kind of conflate the doing stuff for New Jersey with his national ambitions. And the one thing that I noticed when listening to those clips for the second time, this discussion of competence that he's talking about management, is to some extent a knock on Obama. Because what we are starting to see in terms of a storyline taking hold here in Washington, and I think one that's going to really blossom over the next year or so, is sort of the question of the competent management of government, particularly with the ACA implementation. And I think Christie's message, I think, and again, he's got a toggle because I think he's perceived by many Republicans as being too close to the White House. I think his anti-Obama message is going to be one that's largely based on this question of competence rather than ideology.
Anita in Morris County, you're on WNYC. Hello, Anita.
Oh, hi. Yes, I'm in Morris County, the same county that our dear Governor Christie lives in. He was a freeholder. He got in trouble then when he was a freeholder. He railed against teachers about people get a pension, one of whom I am, and what he forgets to tell everybody that the pension system was in so much trouble because the various municipalities and state governments did not put in their share. They depended on the stock market to go up to cover our pensions, but then when the stock market went down, 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 the pension fund was in trouble. I mean, I do not believe one word the man says. If he says it's raining, I will put on my sunglasses.
A member of the 38%. That was the percentage that voted against Christie. So, Anita, thank you very much. Annette in Montclair, you're on the air. Hi, Annette. Another skeptic?
Yes. I'm one of those minority people who didn't vote for him. I can't see him talking one-on-one with a person like Angela Merkel. He has a New Jersey turnpike, loud voice and manner. And I think many people are fooled about his competency because he seems to know everything and be everything by this loud, vulgar manner. it is not suitable for the international political marketplace.
And
I will be the first one not to vote for him if he runs for president.
Thank you, Annette. But loud, vulgar, you didn't hear this part of the speech.
People ask me for hugs to comfort them. People ask me for hugs to make sure I wouldn't forget them. People ask me for hugs just to know that the leader of this state cared about them. And people came up to me all the time in the aftermath and said to me, Governor, where did you get the energy? Where did you get the energy day after day after day to do that? And I told them, you don't understand, do you? Those hugs gave more to me than I could ever give back to them.
I'm crying. I'm sorry.
Well, as the reporter that you had on from the Bergen Record said last night, Christie has pivoted from grizzly bear to Care Bear.
Is this real, Nancy? I didn't know the whole hugs thing.
Oh, yeah.
He the goes around.
Were, oh, yeah.
Is well, this inspired by the famous televised hug that he gave to President Obama, or is it
no,
bigger
no?
Than
he
that?
Has been hugging Sandy victims up and down the shore, and there it's he's a now listen, he's a genuine guy. I mean, I agree with the caller who said he says one thing and he does another, because he does that all the time, and he is very political. But I disagree with, I believe it's the caller we have on the line still. He is a very personable guy who is very warm, very magnetic. When you speak with him, you feel the love, and this is his gift. And you know, and I'd like to just remind people of one other thing. Ronald Reagan is his model, and let's not forget what Ronald Reagan was all about. I mean, Ronald Reagan would appear on the nightly news in a tavern slugging beer with the union guys, and then go back to the White House and attack the unions. So, and this is the model. It's say one thing and have a very different set of policies.
And in Reagan's case, seem like everybody's kind uncle while doing it.
Absolutely.
And similar with Christie, all jokes aside, seeming like he's right there with you. He's got that Clinton kind of charisma when he's there with you one-on-one.
Absolutely.
And he does definitely hear you, whether or not he disagrees with you. Glenn, what about the caller's reference to his New Jersey turnpike style and whether it would play in foreign policy? That's what she brought up, sitting one-on-one with Angela Merkel and things like that, or playing across the country, the New Jersey turnpike personality when it gets to election time. What do you think?
Well, I think the last time I checked, Merkel had to campaign in Bavaria, which I think is it was probably the New Jersey of Germany, right? So I don't think I think he cleans up nice, as they say, and is perfectly capable of having a high-level discourse. I don't think anyone, even his harshest critics, would really criticize the guy's intellect or capacity to really understand the issue. So I think he is not going to be in a position where he is an embarrassment. And certainly
the harshest critics have been flooding our phone lines this morning. Wow. Go ahead.
And I think it actually flips the other way, right? I mean, the question is not, is he to New Jersey, but will Americans in places like Tennessee and Kentucky buy that Jersey is part of the country? I mean, you know, the big problem for these guys in the Northeast is they get cul-de-sac as being rhinos from Jersey and New York. If he can break out of that and sort of sell people on kind of the Springsteen notion that Jersey is the center of the United States, then he's going to win.
I just want to mention one thing, Nancy, before you go. The minimum wage referendum, which Christie opposed, won by the same percentage margin as Christie won. And the exit poll also asked who people would choose today for president between Christie and Hillary Clinton. And Clinton won handily. So what do you make of that whole package of outcomes?
This was not an ideological election. It was a personality-driven election and a feeling of, this is a guy who deserves my vote because he stood up. He stood up to the Republicans. He stood up to John Boehner when they wouldn't pass the Sandy Aid. He worked with President Obama to get the Sandy Aid. That's what this is about. It is about supporting him and thanking him for that. New Jersey voters, you know, we have very detailed exit poll results coming out of yesterday. They don't. The majority of them did not care about the fact that they disagree with Chris Christie. They don't care. They like the guy.
Again, an echo from the Reagan era, where yes, that was often the case.
Yes. You know, I mean, Reagan, there were, you know, the Reagan Democrats all over the country who voted for him. And even, you know, even in Massachusetts, my mother, you know, so it's, yeah, this is the phenomenon. And it doesn't mean that New Jersey is not a blue state. It doesn't mean that, I mean, clearly the minimum wage vote shows this. The fact that people still support Clinton over Christie when they're walking out of the polls after casting a vote for Christie, you know, they just like the guy and they believed his message.
Nancy Solomon, managing editor of New Jersey Public Radio, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Glenn Thrush from Politico is going to stay with us for a couple more minutes as we also bring in from WAMU, Washington, D.C., Public Radio, Michael Pope to talk about the other gubernatorial race, the only other gubernatorial race in the nation, the one in Virginia yesterday. Michael, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And so Terry McAuliffe, first let me say Virginia was considered much more of an indicator of national politics, of President Obama versus the Tea Party, for example, than New Jersey was. And Democrat Terry McAuliffe did win as expected, but only by a couple of points, which was less than expected. So what do you make of it, Michael?
Well, yeah, the polling in the weeks leading up to the election had McAuliffe and an ever-growing lead, anywhere between 6 to 10 points. And then the final election results that we saw last night and also this morning was much closer. McAuliffe has 48%. Cuccinelli has 46%. One of the things to remember, though, about this race, and when you're looking at these percentage turnouts, is there was also a libertarian candidate in this race, Robert Sarvis. And there's lots of feeling among the Republicans that Sarvis sort of acted as a spoiler in this race, taking away votes from the Republican and sort of handing the victory over to McAuliffe.
Yeah, Sarvis got 6 points, and the margin of victory for McAuliffe was like 48 to 45.5, something like that, right? So he didn't crack 50%. And the Libertarian got more votes than the margin of victory. So if we assume that Libertarian votes come from the Republican, major.
That's true. However, one thing, looking at the polling that happened in the last few weeks, Sarvis was consistently polling ahead of where he actually ended up. There was a number of polls that had him at 10%. And so the thinking is that voters, when they were approached by a pollster, when they were called on the phone by a pollster, wanted to express their dissatisfaction with Terry McAuliffe and their dissatisfaction with Ken Cuccinelli. And so they would tell the pollster that they were going to vote for Robert Sarvis. But in reality, when they actually go to the polls and they're, you know, actually looking at the ballot, are they really going to cast a ballot for the Libertarian candidate? So what we saw in the polling leading up to Election Day is Sarvis was overrepresented in those polls.
And yet McAuliffe's margin of victory was smaller than expected. I wonder, Glenn Thrush, if you think it had to do with the tick-tock of national politics, that he was breaking away during the government shutdown because voters in the purple Commonwealth of Virginia wanted to punish Republicans when they were doing their mischief. But then they began to punish the Democrat because of the rollout of Obamacare, that debacle over the last days before the election. Do you read it like that at all, Glenn? Did we lose Glenn? I guess so. Michael, how about you?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Well, the question is, did the national political news affect the flow of support? When
the shutdown,
followed by the Obamacare debacle. So first it helped the Democrat, and then it hurt the Democrat in the last days.
Well, on the issue of the shutdown, Cuccinelli was trying to play that as in his favor, because one of the things he kept saying on the campaign trail is that McAuliffe had promised to shut down the Virginia government unless Medicaid expansion moved forward. That's something that Cuccinelli opposed during the campaign. That didn't work, though, because during one of the televised debates, NBC moderator Chuck Todd asked about this, and McAuliffe vowed in the televised campaign that he would not shut the government down to advocate for Medicaid expansion. So on the issue of the Affordable Care Act, there was certainly lots of talk about that on the campaign trail, especially in the last days of the campaign. Interestingly enough, Cuccinelli brought that up in his speech last night. In his concession speech, he said that the reason that the race came down to the wire and was so close at the end was because of people voted the dissatisfaction among voters about the Affordable Care Act.
Michael, your line is breaking up, but I'll just also mention that the Virginia State House remained in control of the GOP despite McAuliffe's win, so I'm sure they'll have some fun together. And, of course, we've seen how important state houses are when it comes to redistricting and other issues that trickle up to the national level. So I just want to make a note of that.
One point on that. Actually, there's an important distinction to make there. So it's true the House of Delegates remains solidly in Republican control. However, control of the state Senate is now up for grabs. And the reason for that is because the candidate that won for lieutenant governor last night is a member of the Virginia State Senate. Now, right now, the Virginia State Senate is split 20 Democrats to 20 Republicans. So the lieutenant governor gets to break the tie. So currently we have a Republican lieutenant governor. He breaks the ties. So currently the state Senate is in control of the Republicans. However, we now have a Democratic lieutenant governor. The caveat to that is there's now an open seat, and that has to get filled by a special election. Here's where things get even more complicated. The race for attorney general also has two sitting state senators, and that's actually probably headed to a recount at this point. But whoever is victorious will also have a special election. So it's true that the House of Delegates is solidly in Republican control, but the ultimate control of the Virginia State Senate is still up for grabs at this point.
Michael Pope from WNAMU. Yeah, Glenn, go ahead, and we've just got a minute left.
Yes, very quickly, just to answer your question before, I agree with you that the national trends played a role, but I think you can't underestimate how lousy both of these candidates were. I mean, I can never recall the negatives of two leading contenders for a gubernatorial race being well north of 50%. I mean, this really was kind of a beauty contest at the leper colony.
Glenn Thrush, who covers the White House for Politico, Michael Pope from Public Radio in Washington, D.C., WAMU, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Take care.
A couple of the ballot questions around the country that we talked about on the show yesterday or Monday, previewing the election. Colorado voters approved a 25% tax on the legal marijuana sales that they voted in last year, but they rejected a statewide tax increase, putting a two-tier income tax system in place of their current flat tax that would have raised $1 billion for education and mandated that 43% of the state budget go to education, so a split decision on taxes in Colorado. And the GMO food labeling referendum, genetically modified organism foods, will not have to be labeled in Washington state. The GMO food labeling referendum failed in the state of Washington as it had previously in the state of California. All right, up next, we're going to do a mayoral election campaign quiz. Prizes and everything. So, folks, if you think you've been paying attention during the New York City mayoral race, just call up and get in line, and we've got a 10-question quiz coming up in just a minute. Were you paying attention during the mayoral race? If you think you were, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Get two in a row right, and you'll win a, well, we don't know what it is yet, but it's some kind of WNYC thingy. So call up and play and stay tuned.